Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. As we reflect on the game of life, Greg Meyer speaks live from the hub at Urban Ventures, addressing winning. Maybe you can relate to the idea of getting ahead or taking the lead, but what does that look like in real life? The life that is really life. Not just when we're playing games, but in the game of life.
Men's 400-meter hurdles final is away. Ry Benjamin with the white headband on.
And that's Carsten Warholm in lane six. Off to that start that we expected, but Ry Benjamin not letting him get too far ahead. If you look at who's getting over the hurdles first, it's still Carsten Warholm.
So Ry Benjamin has all the flat speed, but Carsten Warholm has the strength. And right now he has a lead. Ry Benjamin is letting this get away from him a little bit. But now he's starting to reel Warholm back in.
Here comes Ry Benjamin on the turn. That was a great turn from the American. It's Ry Benjamin and his nemesis, Carsten Warholm. The American is reeling him in. The world record holder is trying to hold him up, and he will. It's going to be gold for Norway. 45.94. It's a world record, an Olympic record.
This was the Olympics just a couple of days ago, the 400-meter hurdles. And yeah, you can see him there, Carsten Warholm, broke his own world record. So here we are, we got a picture of the finish line, Carsten Warholm, crossing it there, and then there's all the other people, right? You know, kind of, he won. So if Carsten was a winner, what was everybody else? Yes. They were all losers, right? But we all know better than that, but he's the one who was in the headlines and the newspapers, and he's the one who won. And what you maybe don't know is that the guy in the green, Ry Benjamin, United States, he also broke the world record. And the guy in the blue, anybody even heard of him? His name's Dos Santos from Brazil. He also broke the world record. A world record that was set back in 92. It's 28 years old, and these three people all broke it at the same time, but one winner and a bunch of losers. And then those other three, well, you know, right? I mean, there were two more people in these lanes that you can't even see. They didn't even make the picture. Now, okay, so the Olympics are a little bit better than that, right? I mean, the Olympics, we've got a gold and we have a silver, and I really do. I mean, I really appreciate the Olympic spirit is that it brings out the champion. It highlights everybody for their contributions. I think we're pretty healthy with the Olympics and how we treat, you know, we don't just see it as winners. We're amazed at what the best do, but we're impressed what everybody else does. Well, one of the things you also might know about that particular race is that the top five runners all would have won the open 400-meter sprint at the European races. And those people were doing it without hurdles. And the first five would have all beat the winner of that. But yet, you've got a winner and you got a loser. I mean, okay, we all know better than that, but isn't that just a great portrayal of how we fall into the win-lose mentality? And how easy it is to pay attention to the winners and kind of forget about the losers. The fact is that, you know, games are about winning, right? I mean, I grew up in the great state of Wisconsin. We had Vince Lombardi, the long, long time coach of the Green Bay Packers. He's probably most famous for saying, winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. Yeah, well, you know, maybe NFL football. Okay, I can maybe, you know, get behind him on that. But really, even there, it's not true. In fact, so you might say, well, no, winning isn't everything. Just winning isn't everything. But that's actually not the most important thing we could say about winning. I would say the most important thing you could say about winning, if you can only have one phrase, is winning isn't very well understood. I mean, we don't really know what winning is, pretty much, in any game we're playing. We're talking about the game of life these weeks. And but we want games to be about winning. You know, we want to be the one with all the monopoly money. We want to be the one who's out ahead. And whether we like it or not, in our own ways, we want to win at life. I mean, we all do it differently. We have our own weaknesses, our own favorite places, our own favorite ways of doing it, but we kind of want to win at life. And, you know, but the game of Monopoly has this chance. It's playing along, you've taken the lead, you know, you're up ahead, you got everything, and then life throws you one of these things, and you go back three places, or you have to go back to go, and you do not collect $200, and you lose a turn. You know, all that stuff has a tendency to happen. And so, you know, we want to talk about that a little bit today, because if you are playing the game of life, you are playing the game of life, how are you going to play it in a way where you win? I mean, really win. Not just beat everybody else, but really win. And so I'm Greg Meyer, by the way, with Fabric here. And you may have noticed if you're at one of the tables, we have Sunday papers with an outline on them. I think this is the first outline since March of 2020. Trying to do it, it was kind of a throwback for me to try it too. So these outlines are there for you who like to do that. If you want something to write on, if you're listening to the podcast, there's going to be a link to it there as well. And you can find it there. And so we welcome all of you on the podcast. Those of you listening to the live stream right now, thanks for being here with us today. Feel free to throw your own little comments in there as you listen today. Yeah, so we're talking about this real life win-lose stuck places we have. I mean, we are stuck. We tend to fall into the winners, losers as, you know, the only choices so often. And I want to talk about it today, well, mostly because it's something I struggle with. But I think it's something we all struggle with. And I'm not really all that worried about any of us being the one who's just trying to be, you know, the world dominator, the one who's trying to be rich, powerful, influential, famous, important. I mean, that's how you're looking at winning. We all have a little bit of that in us, I know. You can't completely eliminate that from us, but that level of greed probably isn't what's consuming most of us. But what about just that simple idea of getting ahead? I mean, have you ever said that? I just kind of want to get ahead in life. It's not a bad thing to say. I mean, nothing wrong with getting ahead. I hope we can all sort of get ahead. But get ahead of what? It's an innocent phrase, but it implies stuff, doesn't it? Get ahead of what? And what would getting ahead look like? And what are you actually measuring? Like, what is it that actually is getting you ahead? What are you getting ahead of? And how does that all happen? I think those are important things to be thinking about. How are you going to measure it? And then maybe the most important one, and it probably always boils down to this sooner or later, if you want to talk about winning, if you want about taking the lead and finishing before everybody else, how does that apply to your relationships? I mean, do you really think you can win with your partner, with your parents, with your kids, with your boss, your co-workers, your friends, people that you love, with your siblings? Do you think you can win with them without losing? I don't think we can. I mean, that's a complicated thing for us. So, you know, I think what we really need to do is look at this from this three-stranded perspective. And we talk about this at Fabric an awful lot. And I carry my three strands, my rope in my pocket pretty much all the time. You know, and so why does this need to be a three-strand conversation? I think it's a good illustration of why this concept is so important. The single strand, this is just myself, right? And if I'm by myself, how do I feel in this big competitive world? I feel pretty fragile. Life is kind of tenuous. My grip on what is going to make my life, you know, I can count on what's going to happen tomorrow, it's kind of iffy. And I got to compete. I mean, that's it. I've just got to rely on myself. I've got to be independent. I got to go after it. Now, if I add this second strand to it of others, good. I mean, that's certainly an improvement. It gives me something more to rely on. You know, but sometimes I wonder if, you know, if what we're really doing is just pooling our own desperate attempts to get ahead, you know, to be successful, to make life work, to win at where it is. And, you know, it's an improvement. Yeah, I guess at best what we're doing is we're supporting each other, we're learning from each other. That's a good thing. My biggest fear, I think at worst, is what we do is with this other person, fear drives me to try to put them down, to make them lose, so that at least in comparison to them, I feel like more of a winner. Yeah, so the third strand then, adding one plus one plus one, gives us a whole new perspective. This strand is from beyond the others. It sees the world differently, deeply. It understands it and participates in it. It's part of this world beyond what we can see, beyond what our language can hold, beyond what our minds can grasp and hold on to. I like to say this a lot, and you've heard me say it before, but I really think what we learn from the third strand is counterintuitive, but it makes sense. It is not illogical. It isn't that, well, you know, I have to agree to something that some strange, you know, force is telling me that I would, you know, what doesn't seem like it makes any sense at all. No, it makes sense, but it makes sense in a kind of a deep down way. Like it resonates. You say, I think that's right. I think I got to try that, but only experience can verify, and maybe long-term experience can verify that it's true. It's things like generosity, sharing, forgiveness, mercy, those things make me win? Yeah, I think so. It introduces those things. So this third way, this third strand, this counterintuitive but makes sense stuff, fills the Bible. It fills a lot of places, a lot of nooks and crannies where the fabric of existence shows through, where God seeps through the cracks and the crevices of our world. I started thinking about how constant a message that if we want to win in this world, we're going to have to do it in this counterintuitive way, how much that fills the Bible. And I was just thinking about, like, Jesus, first of all. And I just started jotting down the different places where Jesus is talking this way, and it, you know, filled up the page. First of all, you just have how often, I mean, whether you're very familiar with the Bible or not, you're probably familiar with Jesus saying, the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. I mean, that comes up a lot of times. It did not work in the Olympics in the 400-meter hurdles, right? The last one first and the first one last. But what if that last-place runner came from a country that normally never has an athlete, normally never has an Olympian, and he, well, in this case he or she from the women's, went home to their country as someone who was in the finals of the Olympics and still ran faster than pretty much anybody else in the world. And the inspiration that they have are the young men and women in their country. First shall be last, last shall be first. Well, that's one. Then, if anyone strikes you on the cheek, turn your other cheek. And then it goes on. If anyone asks you for your coat, give them your overcoat as well. If they ask you to go for a mile, walk a second mile. That is the definition, folks, of a sucker. And Jesus says, if you want to win, try it out. And then he said, you know, don't bank on treasures that can go away, that are going to rust, that disappear. But be aware that wherever your treasure is, the things that you hold most dear, the things that you're going to invest in, the things that you're going to try to hold on to take care of yourself, they are going to show you where your heart is. Do you really want your heart in those places? Don't think you can make these things the most important and have your heart somewhere else. Seems to fit in. And then he sums it all up with this great phrase, what good would it do you to gain the world and lose yourself? That seems to have some say something about our definition of losing. I love that he says, what good would it do you to gain the world and lose yourself? He does it not and lose your life, but lose yourself. What good would it do you to gain the world? And then Paul, who takes Jesus' teaching and tries to spread it out to other people, he at one point, he's thinking about all the tragedies that he's experienced, and he had a very tragic life, frankly. And we all... And then all the sort of the tragedies that we've had in our life and in our world around us. And he takes all that stuff, all those what we would call losses, all those heavies that got thrown our way, and he says this, we are more than conquerors through the one who loves us. What is more than a conqueror? The literal term would be you're a super victor. You're a super victor because of the one who loves you. I mean... There's something counterintuitive there. It's easy to read and say, well, that's a fun, you know, like a cat poster saying or something. But he's trying to tell us something that he wants us to hang on to and to dig our teeth into. And then there's this. Okay, he's writing to his protege, Timothy. He's telling him that he wants them to coach. He wants them to teach those who have learned to be successful at the regular game of life that we see being played out all around us, right? You know, the visible, obvious one. And he wants them to take those same skills and all that hard work and use them where it matters, use him where it matters as well, right? He's not discounting that they're having an important impact in the rest of the world, at least possibly, but he wants them to use them in this place where things really matter as well. And he ends all of that by saying, teach them then, coach them to store up for themselves a good foundation for the future. Now, that's not a 401k. Teach them to store up for themselves a good foundation for the future so that they can take hold of the life that is really life. Are you putting all your effort into the life that is really life, or just into the life that is really obvious? Again, being kind of a language nut, I read that again and saw that phrase, life that is really life, and I knew that in the biblical language that is really life, that isn't, I mean, you can't really say that in Greek. So I was wondering, what do they say? So I went back and I looked, and it has the word ontos, if you're a language person or a kind of a science person, you know, ontology. It's existence. It means to exist. So really, I mean, a real literal definition or translation, that would be to take hold of the life that actually exists. Not this one that's out there in the fog, not this illusion, not the one that looks like it's there, but, you know, the mirage, that, but when you touch it, isn't there anymore, but the life that actually exists. So here's the deal. You don't have to be a winner. You don't have to be a winner. Why? Because you are a winner, right? You can't change it. You don't have to change it. You are a winner. There's a picture here. Anybody recognize who this is there? In the black mask far right on the photo? Well, her name's right above it, so if you can't tell. That's Suni Lee, right? Everyone wants to see her. Everyone wants to talk to her. Everyone wants to be with her. Is she worth more than she was before she had those amazing gymnastic performances at the Olympics? Well, maybe in terms of money, she's worth more. But as a person, is she worth more? I don't think so, no. You know, the third strand fully embraces you, it holds you, it accepts you, it loves you just as you are. It isn't waiting for some improvement. It isn't waiting for you to get rid of that old stuff that shouldn't be there anymore. It loves you just as you are right now. To put it this way, God, if we want to talk about God that way, doesn't love Suni now more because God couldn't possibly love her more. God won't love you more when you get in the game and get ahead because God can't love you more. You can't be worth more because you are of infinite worth right now. You are a winner. You are a winner. Flip side of that coin is you're also not done. You're not finished. You're incomplete. You are in process. You are under construction. There is more to come in you. There is potential. There is possibility. And it is so important. You know, the either or of win or lose is wrong. It's about being in the game. But that does not mean a participation award for everybody. All right? There's more to it of that. Your intrinsic value, your worthiness for love is not dependent on what you do, but what you do matters. Now, you know that, right? But we all know that is true. I mean, I like to put it this way. This is on your outlines. You were not created to take up space. You were created to make a contribution. So what is that contribution? So excelling at what you do in life. And I want to stop here, pause here, and I want to give you my definition of excellence. This is something that's been part of our community since our day one. And this is maybe worth writing down. But excellence is, this is my definition of excellence. Excellence is doing the best you can with what you have. Excellence is doing the best you can with what you have. So when you've achieved excellence and you have now more ability, more practice, more competence, excellence is going to look different next time, right? If you have a setback, excellence might look that way. Excellence is the bright side. Let me say that the other way around. Perfection is the dark side of excellence, right? So anyway, what I was saying, excelling at what you do in life matters to you. Excelling in what you do in life matters to you. It also matters to others. Matters a lot to others. I'm really good, really glad that the scientists who put this vaccine together that we're taking worked really, really hard and tried to learn everything they possibly could and tested everything as much as they possibly could so that they were able to do that. A parent caring for a child, is there any parent who doesn't at least try to be excellent every moment with the children? The chef preparing your food, the waiter interacting with you at the restaurant, you learning to listen, excelling at what you do matters to you and it matters to the other people around you as well. So, all that. Pretty obvious, I hope, but I sure need to be reminded about it. So to take a lead in the game of life, I got two questions to remember, and these are really basic. One is, what counts? If you're going to want to take the lead in life, if you want to win, what counts? What matters, right? What makes life that is really life, to use Paul's words? All right, that's question number one. What counts? And then number two is, how do I play to win at what counts? And that takes practice. Practice at recognizing what counts and getting good at it. Obvious, right? So that's, but it's worth commenting on because we're all reluctant to put in the work to get really good at what really counts, to rise to the challenges that life asks of us. And that doesn't mean that you're a bad person, that you struggle with that. The perfect people have permission. You've heard everything you need to hear. You can leave. For the rest of us, we know that we struggle with that. And it doesn't mean that we are bad people. What it means is you are a people, all right? You're not a bad person. You simply are a person. We all have hurts. We've got habits. We've got hang-ups that make the path of least resistance, which is what comes out of those hurts, those habits, and those hang-ups. And those take us away from who we could be. And because of these hurts and these habits and these hang-ups, we disappoint, we punish ourselves with negativity, we unleash anger at others who don't deserve it, we fail to rise to meet challenges, and we do it just because we do it. And it doesn't help you win at anything, let alone the stuff that matters, and it keeps anyone else from winning too. So, you probably noticed, though, you've been around those people who don't seem to do that. They don't seem to give in to those hurts, those habits, and those hang-ups. You know, they dig in when they're discouraged. They keep going when they're tired. They respond constructively when they've been assaulted negatively. And they don't just move on after life's, you know, injuries. They seem to thrive because of it. You've seen those people. And sometimes we excuse ourselves. I'm speaking for a friend. We excuse ourselves from being like those people by saying things like, I'm not that kind of person, you know? I automatically get defensive or angry or quiet or I get moody. But actually, that doesn't say you're not that kind of person. It just says you are a person and not a certain kind of person. And this is what I do because of my hurts and my habits and my hangups. I mean, here's the truth. Those reactions that we tend to have that let us fall prey to us, that don't help us make some of the choices we should make, those are reactions that we have fallen into. The person who doesn't fall into those traps, they do it because they have disciplined reactions, not just instinctive ones, not just the ones that they've picked up. So you will play the game of life in ways that really win by choice, not by chance, right? By choice, not by chance. Paul's words to Timothy about what he's doing. He was telling him to coach or to teach others. Or these words from Paul. He says, take time and trouble to keep yourself spiritually fit. Bodily fitness has a certain value, you know that, but spiritual fitness is essential for both for life now and for the future. So that is it. And that's work. And it's new learning, it's discipline. You're not good at it all yet. I'm not good at it all yet. And we can do it. What we are encouraged to do, the things that come naturally for us that we figured out that have probably developed out of our habits and maybe they came out of our hang-ups and out of our hurts in our life, rather than doing the hard work of learning something new that we aren't good at yet, that we don't really know how to do, that isn't fitting into the strengths that we have already. So a couple of choices and a couple of things to remember. And the first two choices, okay? Two choices that I think we all need to make. And you got to figure out what it means to you and how you would do this, but I'll encourage you at least to take these seriously. The first choice is you need a coach, right? You need a coach who knows how to do this well, and I'm going to encourage you to choose God as your coach. Choose God as your coach. Now, that's a really churchy line, and probably some of you are saying that's kind of a weird thing for Greg to say, but I do that on purpose because I want to throw that very concrete word God out there because I don't want you to fall into just your own ideas of self-help, all right? I want you to start considering learning how to win from life by considering things that are just counterintuitive to you. They don't make sense yet, but as you start experimenting with them, you might see how they really are the path that makes sense. I could give you an hour's worth of examples from my life. I'll do that over a beer sometime with you. So when I say choose God as your coach, I'm not talking about some all-powerful deity that's sitting on a cloud, right? Not that at all. I'm not saying get your how-to plan from the Bible, read this chapter a day, and you're going to know how to do this. It doesn't work that way. What I'm saying is I want you to tie into that which is bigger than you. That is where what we talk about when we talk about God, that's where God is found and known. Sure, that happens in the Bible, but it also happens from talking with your neighbor, your grandparent, who's learned so much through what they've gone through in life and pulled wisdom out of that. That stuff that has seeped out of the fabric of existence that they have participated in, that's the third strand that they've been living with that they're giving you insights about. I want you to listen to the tree that does not hold onto its leaves in fall, desperately clinging to it, works so hard to produce, but is generous with them and drops them to the ground, gives them away to replenish the world and knowing and trusting that that will be good for them and that they will have new leaves next year. I want you to listen to your heart that knows the world woven deeply and speaks to it, communicates with it in a language that your mind does not quite know, but you understand its articulation. You understand the tones. You understand the rhythm that it is speaking with. And why God? It's because, like I've been saying, because God loves you already. There are no strings attached. You don't have to prove anything. And maybe most important, you can't fool God. You can't fool the fabric of existence. It knows exactly who you are and what you are. You can play all the pretend games you want, and it won't make any difference. God knows. And you know that God knows, right? You know that God knows. In terms of Melissa's message last week, she said, you know, God is perfectly aware of your healthy, real. God doesn't beat you up with all that stuff. God doesn't hold that against you. God knows what you are really like and is okay with that. Okay, but God also at the same time holds this healthy ideal. God knows what you could be. God knows what's next for you. And God will not let you forget it. It is woven into this world. It is pulling you forward. And when you want to give up on it, when you want to quit, God does not. Makes God a pretty good coach. So, and by the way, I think it's important when we talk about coaches, remember that coaches coach, they don't do your work, you know? Carson Warsholm didn't need to build a little bit more endurance so he could do those last 15 meters well, and so he had his coach run sprints. No, his coach is the one who told him he had to run the sprints. You'd have to do the work, all right? You have to do the work. And how you do it, how you learn to do it, that's okay. That's something for you to work out. Okay, so that's choice one. Choose guys or coach. Choice two, chose to build godly habits. Choose to build godly habits. Again, a distinctly and purposely churchy phrase, which I usually run as far away from as I can, but I want it to slap you in the face. And godly habits, let's call that spiritual fitness. Spiritual practices, spiritual habits. Pretty trite, but put it this way. Why? Why? Why habits? Well, you've already got habits, whether you know it or not. You have lots of habits. You aren't aware of most of your habits. And most of the habits that you have, you've accumulated unknowingly. You never chose them. They just found their way into your life from many, many and various ways, and you practice them all the time. Some of them are great. You've picked up some habits that are serving you well that you aren't aware of, and you've got some of the other kind as well. All right? So choose to let go of the habits that aren't helping you and choose the habits that are really going to help serve you to do well in the real game of life. And We spend some time talking a lot about how you go through that process of choosing and practicing habits. It's a big conversation all of its own. A lot of those habits have more to do with the path of least resistance than to the life that really matters. Okay, so why habits? And then why godly ones? Well, when you're choose habits that come from the coach, right? Ones that you're going to learn from your connection to the deepest part of yourself and from the others in the world and from that which is counterintuitive but makes sense, right? Things that you appreciate now but are going to continue to serve you in the long run. So those are the two choices, right? Choose God as your coach, choose to build godly habits. Now, a couple of things to remember, and I'm all done. This practice, this training, isn't about earning love. And we just need to remember this over and over and over again. We need to communicate it to the people around us. This practice of training isn't about earning love. It's about using love. God loves you. You are loved. You are worthy. You are valued. You are essential. You are irreplaceable in this world. You not only don't have to earn that love, you cannot earn that love. You cannot earn it. The question is not, how will you earn the love that you need, but what will you do with the love that you have? That love is like water poured at the base of a fruiting tree. It makes you strong, makes you healthy, it makes you abundant. It feeds the world through what you do with your life. What are you going to do with the love in your life? Have an abundance mentality about that, not a scarcity one. You may have been getting messages from your parents, from the people around you, from the friends, from society, from work, from teachers that say that you are not loved, or at least they make you feel that way. Now, you are loved. Don't listen to that, all right? That's their stuff that they're working through. Greatness is in you already. Let that light shine. So this is not about earning love. It's about using it. The second thing to remember is this training isn't about arriving. It's about becoming. You are a work in progress. We are who we are. But who we can be, a possible, healthy, stretching, reaching, hoping, that waits for us. So practice dreaming, practice reaching, practice stretching without judging how fast you are or how far you go, all right? And that's hard for us because we keep comparing ourselves to each other, right? We see those others that are far ahead of us and we think we're not as good, but that's not either realistic nor important nor helpful, right? It's you. And because it's also hard for us because we don't want to just run the race, we want to finish it. You know, while there are continual small races, the real race in life is big. Like, I understand if you're playing Monopoly, this game gets really long for me. Like, I'm really ready for it to be finished. I have never finished a game of Risk. I've either purposely lost or just lost interest and walked away. The game of life is one you do not want to finish. It is one you want to stay in. And that's hard for us. It's easy for us to find a short-term goal and go all out and say, okay, I made it, I've got it, I've created an equilibrium, I've found status quo, I'm going to park there, this is what I'm good at, I'm going to keep being good at it. That's great, but there's always more, right? You are not done yet. That's an important thing. Yeah, we don't want this game of life to end any sooner than it needs to. The third thing to remember is this training isn't about being better, it's about growth. It isn't about being better, it's about growth. You know, I hate to break it to you, but people who practice this stuff that we're talking about, that we think about, that we aspire for, it doesn't necessarily mean they're better people than others, all right? And it's because it isn't about being better. I mean, sure, better is better. I mean, who doesn't like better than worse? I mean, yeah, that's true, but better is missing something. Better is too linear, first of all. In order to know what better is and to secure it, we have a tendency to oversimplify both what it means to be better and how to get there. And that's dangerous. And wanting to be better also encourages us to skip the bumps, skip the stuff that feels like it's heading us in the wrong direction. But that is the stuff that actually refines us, that makes us what we need to be. It adds a heat to our lives that turns us into something greater. So here's the closing thought that I want you to have as we finish these thoughts about what it means to be taking the lead in the game of life. And that has all to do with this idea about training isn't about being better, it's about growth. You aren't meant to learn how to be perfect, okay? You aren't meant to learn how to be perfect. What you are meant to do is to learn how to deal with being imperfect. What if every day that was your challenge. What if that was your big goal, whether it's as a parent, whether it's a kid, as a teacher, as a student, as a friend? What if you understood your job is, today I want to learn how to deal with being imperfect in a new way? That's growth. That's living with the strength of all three strands, because yours alone isn't going to hold you. That's getting uncomfortable with forgiveness. That's embracing failure. It's learning how to be an unlearner as well as a learner. It's figuring out how to be strong and how to lean on other people at the same time. It means making mistakes that you're going to regret, but not getting stuck in that regret. Learning how to deal with being imperfect is where peace lives. It's where joy happens, even when you don't think you deserve it, even when you don't think the people around you maybe deserve it. May that be so.
Thanks for listening. We hope this conversation continues in your life. You can find other Fabric folks through our social media accounts at FabricMPLS, or find resources for discussions with smaller groups, family, and friends on our website. We also have live gatherings in the Twin Cities we'd love for you to be part of. Learn more at FabricMPLS.com.